Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Marnie Bickel. Marnie, I am really jealous. I would love to find something in the attic. That is just such a romantic notion. It really is. And I believe it's not only the memoir pieces you found up there.
Right.
You found other things too. So you want to tell us about some of the stuff you found?
And certainly, I will. As I mentioned before, I found this box of letters that were written to Ruth, all his letters actually written during the war. So that's from early in 1941 till the end of the war. And then it went on even beyond the war because Ruth wasn't discharged. She was in at Trenton as a dental assistant, and she wasn't discharged until sometime in the fall. So over 300 letters that I have.
Wow.
But I also found the scrapbook of their first 5 years of their marriage, which was quite lovely.
Oh, wow.
And then other letters. For instance, the Department of Northern Affairs and Natural Resources hired David to translate and look after two young carvers that were sent from Cape Dorset as a part of the first ever exhibition of Inuit Eskimo art in 1959, and that was to be held at the Stratford Festival.
Yes, it is.
And the reason, I think possibly it was there was because the Queen was visiting that year. She was coming to open the Seaway. And so she was also going to be visiting the festival, and she was going to be going through this whole collection of art and carvings and so forth. Now, as it turns out, David would have met her if he'd stayed home, because she was staying up the road at Batterwood. He would have been able to wave to her. But because he was translating for these boys in Stratford, he actually met her. And we have a picture of David with the two carvers and clippings of him shaking hands with the Queen. So all of that was in the attic, plus lots of other treasures.
Now, did Ruth know they were up in the attic?
She did know, but she didn't want them. She had taken the few pictures that she wanted to her small little retirement apartment. And the other things, she just dispose of them.
And she was okay with you?
You know, she was already gone before I really had a chance to get going on them. So,
well, it's just such a lovely romantic story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Now, did David Ford have any of his writing published at all during his lifetime?
He did. In 1958, he had a book called Feast of the Midnight Sun published. It was a retelling of the Eskimo folklore of the annual fertility feast.
Still.
Now, it was published, but I think the publishers were more interested in David adding more sex than actually writing well. It's really an abysmal read, and I think it caused quite a stir among family, friends, and certainly the golf set. Ruth's parents belonged to the Port Hope Golf Club, and I'm sure they were just mortified.
Oh, that is a funny story.
Yeah.
So, you've rewritten the memoirs.
Yes, I have one more to go.
One more, mm-hmm. And then are you going to do something else with those memoirs or with the letters? Or
I really want to go through the letters next and try to just put together the story of the war years. Unfortunately, I don't have Ruth's letters. I only have David's, but I think I can get a fairly decent story from that. And then, since the war, he was a character. I don't think he ever really fit in anywhere. And so, here he was called Son of the North, but he was a white man.
Right.
In, you know, Hudson's Bay Company, son, long line of traders and so forth, in a world where they weren't necessarily welcome eventually.
No.
And I don't think he ever really fit into Port Hope. So I want to maybe explore that a little bit and pull it together. In the meantime, I certainly have been giving talks to school children, and I hope to use Coates Island in the school down the road from where he lived. I teach private piano lessons there, and so I mentioned to the principal that we could maybe use that as their social studies piece in grade 6. So
oh, lovely.
That goes ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just so authentic, isn't it?
It is.
So
yeah.
That's wonderful.
Thanks.
We haven't had time to talk about your own personal writing on this show, but I know you've written other memoirs. perhaps you'd like to read a little from your own writing.
I will. This is something I wrote about my father-in-law. He passed away in 1994. And I think there's a lot of what's here that still holds true today. So this is called Death in the Country. It was to be a church funeral. Every important milestone of life for generations had taken place in that hallowed space, and today history would be recorded once more. The warm September sun added highlights to each bouquet around the casket. It glowed on Morley, too, and made the familiar last respects come true. He looks better now than he did the last time I saw him. The ushers, with looks of controlled panic, bustled as the crowds filled the pews and every additional chair set up in the narthex, along the aisles, in the sanctuary, and still they came and had to strain to hear the service from outside. The family, exhausted from the hours of receiving hundreds of friends and acquaintances the night before, were relieved to sit as one of the congregation, while the minister spoke a comforting yet honest memorial to the man who rested in the thoughts of everyone there. After the benediction, the pallbearers began their slow procession. They carried the casket across the road through the iron gates of the cemetery and down the parallel rows of skyrocket cedars to the 200-year-old family plot. The church bells rang, and a shiny black Model T Ford waited respectfully on the road by the cemetery, as if to impress upon the funeral attendees, as they streamed and streamed and streamed across to the gravesite, that the old is not forgotten in this part of the world. The graveyard buzzed with activity once the committal, the dust to dust, was over. A knot of smokers between the cedars, a history lesson for the city folk down by the oldest tombstones, visiting family seeking out graves of relatives and old friends reacquainting. Gradually the mass made their way back to the church to the tables of sandwiches and sweets, tea and coffee made and poured by the Canton United Church women. Now that the main formalities were over, the visitors could relax. They were free to eat and drink and browse around the church building looking at memorial plaques, stained glass windows, pictures and paraphernalia that told a story of the Canton community and its families. They chatted with the locals and exchanged anecdotes about Morley. He was a farmer with a brain, maybe too many brains. He spent hours in thought while smoking his pipe, but their talk today was about what he did. The community knew him as the music man who played the piano and electric bass with the welcome buskers to brighten many lonely hearts at old folks' homes and provide entertainment at social events. Like the country preacher, he traveled from place to place with his portable pump organ to play for memorial or summer outdoor church services. But he had more than farming and music to keep him busy. The war prevented him from finishing an electrical engineering degree. He returned to farming, became a licensed electrician, ham radio operator, and sometime in his 50s took up flying and earned his twin engine and instrument licenses. He was out flying with a friend just weeks prior to the illness that grounded him for good. A number of community members talked about Morley's most controversial contributions as council member and continual opponent of land developers. The latest scheme had been to buy up farmland to build country estate subdivisions. While government and business types skirted around the perimeter of land and tax and boundary issues, Morley fooled them all with his slow and quiet farmer exterior. He went to the core of the matter with a proposal that sent the developers back to their city office towers and saved the farmland from urban rape for a little while longer. Such were the gleanings of the casual eavesdropper and intermittent conversationalist that day. By mid-afternoon, the crowd had devoured the food and drink and given their final condolences. As the last car pulled away from the church, there was no trace left in the cemetery of there being a funeral that day. The earth had taken Morley in, and the grass, back in its place, awaited his place marker. Another farewell, another community member, husband, father, friend, gone. Another question of who will carry on the Morley things, the Morley fight, and another resignation that somehow everyone will muddle through. Perhaps the hardest hit by the day's events were the city dwellers, the originally rural, who loaded their cars with country produce before pulling onto the 401 and wondered if their acquiescence to the noisy, cramped, uncaring city had been shaken. These citified, who later in the week write on the office to-do list, find info about growing fall raspberries, or sneak a look at the out-of-town real estate in the Globe and Mail. Maybe one of the young and absent and proud of it will blow the dust off the country memories. Maybe some will realize that their city-admired fortitude is from away. Maybe someday they will muster up the courage to plan the journey back. Morley will smile his own quiet smile and rest in peace.
Well, thank you, Moni.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I do hope some of them will do that.
I do.
Yes. When will the memoir be released, do you know?
The very first part, Coates Island, I will self-publish.
Okay.
People can order it by emailing me at my email address, marniebickle@me.com.
At me?
That's at me, M-E.
M-E, okay.
All right. And then eventually we will have it up on our website as well.
Okay, well, when you have it, let us know and we'll send the word around.
All right, thank you very much.
And if listeners would like to connect with us at the program, please send your comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to wordonthehills897@gmail.com or leave a comment on our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. And thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, right here on Truly Local Radio.